Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Mr. Main, registration number 192, to the meeting.
Thanks, Chairman. Just a couple of quick points. I was amused to hear Mr. Cherry mention the nickname the Millionaire Factory. I'm very proud of the fact that I coined that nickname back in 1996 in the Herald Sun. If only I had a dollar for every time it's been used, I'd certainly own more than the six shares I've got. But never in my wildest dreams when I came up with that name 10 years ago did I imagine that the top five executives in a single year would share in 96 million. And clearly this is a question about quantum. Now Morgan Stanley is 10 times bigger than Macquarie in size, in value, yet its CEO John Mack only got 13 million last year, whereas Alan Moss got 16 million. Citibank, the world's biggest financial institution, worth half a trillion Australian dollars, their CEO only got 23 million. So it's all very well to say we've had great returns on equity compared to our peers, but when you're already capitalised at $500 billion, it's pretty hard to have a 20% return on equity. I mean, these giants of the financial industry are already massive, and you're paying yourselves, your top teams, comparable figures to what these giants are getting when you're often 1/50th or 1/20th the size. So I think the quantum's out of whack. And I think this, I do agree, though, with the philosophy that you've outlined, the pay for performance and all those sort of things, but there's a couple of specific modifications I think you should look at. Firstly, there's too much going to the top table, that I think you should be spreading the bonuses around the lower level directors more. No one needs 21 million a year like Alan Moss, so spread it around more. Two, I think you should lower the percentage of the bonus pool, which I think at the moment is 40% of the gross profit. If you made it 30% of the profit, if you announced that tomorrow, the share price would go to 80 bucks straight away. Because instantly us shareholders are losing 40% of the gross because it's the bonus pool. Now the top table up there has about $200 million worth of shares. So you would all massively benefit. Everyone at Macquarie Bank is set. They're all in options plays and equity schemes. If you cut the bonus pool to 30%, the stock would go to 80% and everyone would win. So I think it's something you should seriously look at. The other two points is I think you should be paying more of the bonuses in scrip, like Babcock's do, and I think you should be locking up a little bit more than 20%. You're only locking up 20% of the cash over a 5 to 10 year period. So I'd love to see you lock up maybe 30 or 40% and your retention rates would remain just as high. So just a couple of comments on those modifications to a very successful formula over the last 30 years.
I say. Whether you're right or wrong in saying that the stock would go to whatever it was, $80, I suspect the stock would go down if we did that, because I would certainly, if I was an investor, be worried about how we were going to retain our staff. And that goes back to the central message of remuneration. If we don't pay competitive salaries and competitive profit sharing arrangements and have a competitive option package, we are simply not going to be able to attract in the first instance and subsequently retain the best people. And I've said at previous AGMs, we might wish the world was different, but it's not. That is the real world of investment banking. The number you quote for John Mack, I can quote much, much bigger numbers for other Wall Street competitors. We have to be cognizant of what the competitive situation is. And the one thing I can tell you is, despite these allegedly outrageous numbers, maybe they are from a social point of view, but they're certainly not from a competitive investment banking point of view. We get people who are hired away from us to go and work for other investment banks. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is we got someone like Towers Perrin to independently look at it. And their conclusion basically was that, yes, we're in line, but if anything, we're making it tougher on our employees. We have a much more long-term orientation in all of our arrangements. The options that are granted to people in Wall Street are much more concentrated at the top and generally don't have performance hurdles at all. The last time I looked at it in detail, our remuneration distribution was considerably flatter. Certainly in options, it's considerably more widespread than the US investment banks, which tend to be very concentrated at the top. So, I mean, there are a number of points that I can sort of have some sympathy with. The one point I can't agree with is that we can afford to be uncompetitive. If we are uncompetitive, we will lose all our people. And I don't know what the bank is if it's not the people.
Just a procedural point, Chairman. You've done show of hands in every one of your other AGMs. This is the first AGM where you've gone straight to a poll. I think the only reason you've done that is because I'm running for the board this year, and so you have a new element, and you don't want to risk the sentiment of the room being demonstrated publicly. Now, you are disenfranchising the people who've made the effort to come to this meeting by not allowing them to express their views after taking the trouble to hear the debate. So I think that you should take on the comments made by the previous speaker and allow those people here to express a view on the remuneration report and on every other resolution, and then go to a poll as well. So we actually have more levels of voting, not less. And I'd also ask that you show the proxies after the debate on each resolution, rather than just slapping them all up in one big go on eight resolutions at the end, so that we can see what the proxy position is while it's fresh in our mind after we've had a particular discussion on a particular resolution.
So, in respect of the proxies, can I just simply say that there is no agreed best practice as to whether you when you should show them. We're proposing to show them before the meeting finishes. There's an equally strong argument that the proxies shouldn't be shown too early because they then influence voting, and that's a bad thing rather than you're saying it's a good thing. As I said, I'll take the question of indicative shows of hands on board for next year. I think there's no doubt that it's true that the Macquarie Bank Board has previously worked on a show of hands. It's not true that this was decided before your nomination was received, quite frankly, so your nomination didn't have any influence on the decision. In addition, because it's in the notice of meeting, I feel bound to stick with that, and we'll consider the whole issue between now and the next AGM and come back on it.
Chairman, just a specific question for Mr. McCann, which I'd like Mr. McCann to answer. I think, Chairman, part of it relates to a practice that you've participated in the past, so I don't think you're in a position to give an independent answer. Now, my question is, Macquarie Bank's policy of allowing board members, senior executives, to buy shares in capital raisings, placements and floats that the bank is doing. This is a practice that's illegal in the US. Merrill Lynch, JP Morgan, Brian's fine firm don't allow it because it's illegal, because it throws up obvious conflicts of interest that if you're an investment bank and you've got all the inside knowledge and running on a capital raising, if you know this is a particularly great deal, the temptation is that the staff and management of, and board of the bank will take up the shares and the customers will miss out. So I would like to hear from Mr. McCann, as the senior independent director, the director we turn to on independent governance issues, as to why he believes a practice which is illegal in the US should be continued and tolerated in the Australian market.
Mr. Bain, first of all, can I correct you that I am not conflicted in any way. The only thing which has appeared in your column is an investment that was made in Hills Motorway. It occurred long before the float, and I didn't receive any shares in that float or any subsequent float. So that's wrong. Secondly, it's not illegal in the United States. There's a totally different regulatory regime there. There are exceptions to the rule of staff not being able to take up shares in the float, so it's wrong to say it's in blanket terms illegal. But more importantly, can I just reiterate what our policies are? And they are driven again by this question of alignment, because we think that's the most important aspect. If the vehicle is a Macquarie specialist vehicle, and provided that any application is disclosed in the public disclosure statement, then staff can participate in that sort of IPO. It depends on whether or not they're going to be directly involved. It depends on the other things I've met, and it also depends on staff being allocated shares on an equal or lesser footing to those required by clients. Now, policies in this area have evolved over time. They're not exactly the same now as they were before. The regulatory regime has evolved over time, but all I can say is that the bank has acted properly at all times and we're satisfied that that's the case. But I'm now happy to ask Mr. McCann if he'd like to add anything to what I said.
David, thank you. I think you've really answered, Mr. Main. The really important points, just to reiterate what the Chairman said, are that the US law legal position is different from Australia. It's different because the nature of underwriting in the United States is different from Australian underwriting.
This is the, this relates to the proposed election of an external candidate. Nomination for the election of Stephen Main was made by a single shareholder in accordance with the bank's constitution. Can I ask that a shareholder move that Mr. Stephen Main be elected as a voting director of the company? It's moved over there. Thank you. The motion is so moved. Ladies and gentlemen, I note that the board's policy on the appointment of directors is stated in the explanatory notice, explanatory notes of the notice of meeting. Having regard to this policy and the scale and complexity of the bank's businesses, each voting director believes that Mr. Main lacks the experience and skill required of a voting director of the bank. Therefore, each voting director believes that it is not in your best interests that Mr. Main be elected and recommends that you vote against his election. Mr. Main writes for an internet newsletter. He has stated that he is standing on a platform that Macquarie Bank adopt US best practice and implement a ban on staff trading, on staff taking up shares in floats or capital raisings that the bank is managing. He has also stated that if elected, he will resign once this policy is implemented. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say at the outset that the election of a director for such a singular purpose is completely inconsistent with the most fundamental responsibility of directors, namely to be jointly responsible for the operation of the whole business. Nevertheless, I wish to point out that Macquarie only allows staff allocations in floats of Macquarie-related vehicles, such as its property trusts or infrastructure funds, and it does so to align the interests of its staff with the interests of the investors in those funds. US regulations in this regard are substantially different from Australian regulation. Moreover, none of Macquarie's US-based competitors have their own suites of listed investment vehicles. And as such, we believe that this comparison isn't appropriate. So let me be clear again about our policies. Macquarie staff can join the general queue for any offer by completing an application form in the same manner as any other individual investor. Regardless of who is managing the float, Macquarie staff receive no priority over other investors. However, allocations set aside for Macquarie staff are permitted in limited circumstances, namely, first, if the vehicle to be listed is a Macquarie-managed fund. Secondly, if securities are allocated to staff on an equal or lesser footing to clients. Thirdly, if all Macquarie staff are eligible to participate. And fourthly, if the firm allocation is disclosed in the PDS. A key point I'd make today is that our policies have evolved over the years as the regulatory framework has evolved and as laws have changed. We're confident that at all times, in all our relevant dealings, the bank has acted properly and acted within the regulatory framework. I now invite Mr. Main to say a few words from the floor in support of his election.
Thanks, Chairman. We've agreed for a 5-minute limit, so please feel free to cut me off if I exceed that. This has been a 10-year journey on this issue. In 1997, I was a journalist on the Herald Sun in Melbourne, and we paid $500 to get a copy of the Transurban Share Register, a float in which Macquarie was one of the three brokers. And when we discovered that register, we went through it and we discovered some very large allocations of shares to a number of Macquarie executives. Laurie Cox, at least he was the chairman of Transurban, $750,000 worth of shares. Alistair Lucas, $140,000. Richard Shepherd, the deputy managing director, $200,000. Now, this was a float in which Macquarie was not the external manager. It is a standalone company with internal management. It is not a Macquarie specialist fund. It's also a float that closed after 2 days, massively oversubscribed. There was huge interest in it. If you were lucky enough to get shares in it, you've made about tenfold on your money, including capital returns so far. I felt then that it was absolutely inappropriate that Macquarie was allocating large allocations of shares to their senior executives in preference to their external clients. I thought I'll try the experience. I signed up as a customer of Macquarie. I was used to getting floats through McIntosh and Merrill Lynch. I signed up for Macquarie. I didn't get a cracker for 2 years as a client of Macquarie. I then read a story in the Fin Review in 1999 in which the managing director of Merrill Lynch, a fellow called Greg Bundy, said he couldn't believe that Australia had these backward laws that allowed stockbrokers to take up stock on their PA, on their personal account. And in America, there's this rule 1A, he said. Rule 1A is you don't allow it. So what do? If you're concerned, I'm a professional campaigner for better governance. What do? I've written about it. I've come to previous AGMs. I've raised it as a quick concern 2 or 3 times. It keeps on getting batted away. So my last resort is to run for the board. I would have preferred to put up a shareholder resolution, but you need 100 signatures to do that. It's quite difficult. In the US, you only need $2,000 worth of shares. It's another great example of how the governance system in America is far stronger than in Australia. So as a proxy for this issue, I've nominated for the board on the platform that Macquarie adopts US best practice, because this is massively open for conflicts of interest. Insiders at Macquarie know all the numbers. I mean, what about the question of whether the executive invests or the bank invests? I'm all for the bank investing, but you shouldn't have individual executives, like as occurred with Transurban, investing hundreds of thousands of dollars of shares, making large profits at the expense of third-party clients. Now, the chairman in his address made a reference to the fact that Macquarie aims to observe the highest standards and said, we act with integrity. And Alan Moss in his speech said that reputation is right at the top of the list for Macquarie Bank. So I cannot work out why they continue to hold their ground on this one, which for me is an absolute no-brainer. So I'd like you today to vote for me. I'll only get 10% if I'm lucky. There's no way I'm going to get on the board. But I'd like you to vote for me to send the board a message that you want them to adopt best practice to deal away with the conflict of interest. Because there are always governance issues with Macquarie. I'm uncomfortable with their large political donations, their huge pay packets, hiring Bob Carr. But it does actually add to shareholders' value. There is a benefit for shareholders from getting some connected political door opener from paying large donations. We see the benefit of that. There's no benefit in having a policy that damages your brand and annoys your clients. I was a client of Macquarie and I left because they have this conflicted policy of allowing staff to take up shares, and I went away. And they've missed out on tens of thousands of dollars of brokerage from me, a client, who's held shares in more than 200 stocks and turns them over. So it would be good for shareholders to have this policy. Macquarie can then take the corporate governance high road. They can wear the white hat rather than the black hat on this governance issue. So my message is, vote for me. And to the board, I'm not going to let this one go. If you don't change, I'll run again next year. I will get the 100 signatures. I'll get a shareholders resolution up. It's just an absolute no-brainer, and I would implore you to change your position rather than stubbornly sticking with a policy which was acceptable in the freewheeling 70s, 80s and 90s, but it's just not acceptable with today's standards of corporate governance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayne. I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree. To us, the importance of the alignment principle overrides what you're saying, provided it's done with adequate safeguards that, and we, without any doubt in my view, have acted properly at all times. I won't bother going into the individual ones that you cite, but there is a good and proper explanation for each one.